This is Belonging, a podcast that explores being alive in the age of loneliness. I'm your host, Becca Piastrelli, and I mentor space holders, kin keepers, and circle facilitators to be catalysts for belonging in their communities while also generously resourcing themselves at the same time. I am also a mother and land steward of a farm on the ancestral lands of the Mohican people in the present-day Hudson Valley of New York. In this podcast, I explore topics like cultivating meaningful community, seasonal and cyclical living, ritual and rites of passage, and what it means to be a good ancestor in these times. I have thought-provoking conversations with friends, teachers, and elders to help support you in reorienting your life towards a legacy of regeneration and reconnection that breathes life into future generations. I also pop in here and there to share updates and learnings from my own story, because we were meant to do this together, cosmically holding hands as we walk the spiral of life. You can expect to be challenged by new or old ideas, face your beliefs and what systems informed them, get curious and brave to tell the truth about the deeper, harder things, and feel comforted in the knowing that you don't have to navigate it all alone. For show notes and links mentioned in these episodes, and to sign up for Slow and Seasonal, my once-in-a-while email newsletter, head to BeccaPiastrelli.com. Hello, friends and dear listeners. Welcome back to another episode of Belonging, the podcast. I'm your host, Becca Piastrelli, and today I have a conversation, a really, really deep, tender, important, nuanced, complex, emotional conversation about social media with my friend and former producer of this podcast, Amelia Ruby. So Amelia Ruby is a feminist author, educator, podcaster, and founder of Softer Sounds Podcast Studio. She learned to podcast when she was a DJ for Chirp Radio in Chicago and honed her skills interviewing feminist activists and artists for her listener-supported podcast, 50 Feminist States. Over the past 6 years, she has worked with hundreds of small business owners and edited even more hours of audio as she's helped founders across the country grow their businesses with ease and intention. And Amelia is on this podcast today because of her amazing work with one of her podcasts called Off the Grid, which is the grid we're talking about here is the social media grid. It's a podcast for small business owners who want to leave social media without losing all their clients. And I know not all of the people who listen to this podcast identify as business owners. And there is something about what Amelia is talking about with social media that I think transcends just like, should I be on Instagram for, you know, my circle? Should I be on Instagram for my blog? Should I be on Instagram? I mean, did I just date myself saying blog? Should I be on Instagram for me, it's like for my small roadside chicken egg business. One thing I'm thinking about right now for this podcast. These are questions we're all asking as we, especially those of us who are in the millennial generation, have seen the rise of this way of being with each other, this parasocial way of connecting with each other, which is, you know, not just one thing, not just one good or bad thing. And I know I have a lot of questions. So as if you've listened to me on this podcast, then you know I like to bring people I love on the mic and ask them to support and coach me and help me unpack and untangle things I'm thinking about and grappling with, because I have learned that if I'm grappling with it, perhaps you are grappling with it too. So this conversation is beautiful and vast. So Amelia has left social media, and she talks about the impact it has had on her life, and she makes this beautiful connection on how her anxiously attached relationship with social media helped her realize she was in a pattern that was negative and toxic for her. She delves into the loneliness that can arise from leaving social media. Like, how do I know what my friends are doing? How do I keep up with my friends? And the struggle to find community outside of it. We talk about those of us who are business owners or community creators or people who want to get the word out about what we're doing, how to do that if you don't want to be on social media. And then the impact social media has on personal identity and well-being, including my personal desire that I'm working through this year. It seems to be an emerging theme of my 2024 is my desire to be seen, my healing of my shame around wanting to be seen, and how to do that healthily, and where social media sort of intersects with that in the Venn diagram. And then how these platforms are designed to do things that are like not cool, that spread misinformation, lead you through the algorithm, lead you down a path to places you don't want to be. And, you know, as a mother of a toddler, it really has me thinking about what I want for her and how I feel about the way social media is going. And too long, don't read. I don't feel great about it. So there's no hidden agenda here around me convincing you to not be on it or praising you if you aren't. I'm basically in the conversation and the questions. And I also think there are so many ways I've taken time off social media. Like, I've taken social media sabbaticals. I've done it where I only post in stories on Instagram and I leave my grid up. Like, I put up a 9 grid. I've been experimenting, and that's just my way. That's my life way. And I haven't quite found it. Also, I talk about how I have a different relationship with social media based on where I am in my cycle as a cycling human being, as a woman with a seasonal cycle with the earth as well as with my body hormonally, and how, yeah, there are like times of year and times of the month is like not good for me to be on social media. And then there are other times where it feels really, I think I use the word medicinal. So if you're like, that sounds like something I want to investigate too, I really think you should stick around for this conversation. Show notes, as always, is at belongingpodcast.com. And let's dive in. If you want to chat about it, I'm still saying I'll post at least one post about this episode on my Instagram. So if you are on Instagram and feel like good being there, feel free to leave comments and chat with other folks, including myself, about what you heard, what came up for you. I welcome the conversation there. All right, let's dive into my conversation with the wonderful Amelia Ruby. Amelia Ruby, welcome to the Belonging Podcast. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me, Becca. It's a joy and an honor.
Yeah, I only have people on the podcast that I'm huge fans of and that I can gush over, I'm realizing. It's sort of like my way of connecting with people I love. To orient people to who you are, you used to produce this here podcast.
I did.
You have a podcast production studio called Softer Sounds. And if anyone is looking for like the best of the best in podcast production, softersounds.studio is the best. And you've mentored me in trying to understand more about like what I'm doing here with this podcast, who I'm trying to reach. It's been so powerful to work with you. And you also have this kick-ass podcast called Off the Grid, which I highly, highly recommend if you are a business owner, content creator, anyone who's trying to get your message out in the world, because it's a podcast about doing business without having to be on social media. That's the grid we are talking about. And it's one of my favorites. I just listened to the most recent one with fan favorite Nicole Antoinette.
Yeah.
Who left social media about 8 months ago. It's a really good episode. I'm going to put that in the show notes. So I want to talk to you about social media as someone who is on it.
I embrace that.
Yes. So there's something I love about your podcast is that you're like, maybe you haven't left yet. And I'm like, I don't know if I'll ever leave. I can't put pressure on myself, but I want to talk about in that. I want to speak into this tension I feel with someone who has fully, who has this like perspective on social media that has made a decision that is not my current decision, to educate me and educate all of us. And I would love, I think my goal from this conversation is to feel deeper clarity in what it is I'm doing and where it is I'm going. So my first question to you is, what has been your relationship with social media, Amelia?
You know, Over the years, it's been a wild ride. I would say that I'm a pretty typical millennial born in 1991. And I got on social media in college. No, I got on Facebook in high school. I got on Instagram in college. And I started building a personal brand there in my 20s. And I put a lot of time and energy and love into it. I sold courses and stickers. I got a book deal. I sold my book. I invested, again, so much time and money into Instagram, into paying for brand photos, paying for social media strategy. A lot of that was focused around selling my book. Mm-hmm. And through that process, through that decade of being on social media, I just started to really deeply feel how it was not aligned with my values and how my relationship with these apps had really become one of codependency and anxious attachment. I was always looking to them for approval. I couldn't be away from them. I was constantly checking and feeling unworthy in the process. And that realization combined with some really, I would say, like principled issues I have with surveillance online and the ways that these apps track us, not only on our phones, but across all of our digital activities. Those two things combined eventually led me to the decision that I had to leave all social media apps, which I did in April of 2021. And since then, I, in some sense, haven't looked back. I run a business that's not active on social media. I live a life that's not shared on social media. It's shared online in a lot of places, but not on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, any of these popular apps that we talk about. But you know, it's interesting you ask about my relationship, because now I run this podcast about leaving social media. So I'm still in relationship with it in a really interesting kind of way. It's kind of like I went through a breakup and now I'm like an advocate for how toxic some relationships can be. Mm. And here I am.
Oh, I'd love to know more about that.
The breakup, the toxic
relationship? I mean, no, sorry. So aggressive, Becca. No, I guess as someone who's like, yes, totally codependency. Yes, totally toxic relationship. Yes, totally. Like all of that stuff, like surveillance. Yes. And also I'm addicted. And I'm also receiving something that I would code to positive, you know, in mm-hmm. it. So I hear you saying these words and I want to hear more of them about if there's any aspect of what you just shared about the relationship that didn't feel good or right for you in a more specific way that helped you pull the plug.
Yeah. So I think that I can definitely speak more to that moment of realizing that I was anxiously attached to social media. And for me, anxious attachment was a long-term pattern that I had in every romantic relationship that I had been in since high school. And so I had gone to quite a bit of therapy to help me heal that and to help me tap into what secure attachment could be like, particularly for me in a romantic relationship, but also in friendships. I really struggled to believe that people cared about and would continue to care about me. And so the anxious attachment piece is I would just be checking in all the time and I would be highly attuned to any shift in a dynamic and I would panic. And then I would, it's almost like, you know, scratching a wound. Like I would pick at a scab or a scar in a relationship until it was so infected, such a problem. But I actually had started out just as a paper cut. If I, you know, it was all about just me struggling to believe in, again, like my value, my worthiness, the strength of these relationships. And so therapy helped me with all of that.
Bless
therapy helped me recenter in my own experience, helped me detach from a lot of projection I was doing that was causing these issues, helped me communicate more honestly about my feelings so I could share when I felt hurt, when I noticed something without turning it into this big thing, unless it needed to be a big thing. But I was typically, you know, escalating things that perhaps could have been resolved. And because I had gone through all that therapy, it felt like a light bulb moment. Like that took a long time. But then when I saw it in social media, in my relationship with social media, I couldn't unsee it. And that has been how a lot of shifts have happened personally for me. It's like really, really slow. And then all of a sudden I get this clarity. And once that's there, once I'm really aware of a misalignment, I can't live within it anymore. For me, it's like I'm so allergic to places in my life where my actions are not aligned with my values. And I think other people can live in that tension a lot more, or it's a lot murkier for them. But with social media, it became really clear to me and I had to go. Again, it was a long process. I was so invested there for a decade, particularly on Instagram. But once I saw that, I was out within a couple months.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. I relate as an anxious attacher, working on it for the rest of my life.
It's a lifelong journey.
Yeah. And I'm really, I am struck by the idea of like, is it possible to have secure attachment with social media? Is it possible? And I find that really interesting. And okay, so how has life been like since you left?
There have been many stages of how it's felt since I left. So I like to be really clear that I don't think leaving social media radically, dramatically changed my life. Like, it was a big change. But at the end of the day, like, the mundane aspects of my life were all the same. The same partner before and after, the same family before and after. I did change jobs, which was sort of related, but not related to that. But, you know, it was a big change. And I think when we're in that moment of like asking ourselves, we're like, this will change everything, or sometimes this will fix everything. And I don't think leaving social media necessarily does that at all. But for me, when I first left, I had so much creative energy because I had been pouring hours and hours of every day of my life into this app. It wasn't there anymore. And so I was just pouring it into other places. I like sent more newsletters out in the 3 months after I left social media than I have like since then combined. I was just creating and flowing and I felt so abundant. And then I crashed. Like, I came back down to earth and I realized how unsustainable the demands on my like productivity and creation were, just like staying in this endless cycle of content creation. And for me, I like to think of it as like I came back to a more human pace with myself. My experience with social media was a lot about creating for social media and engaging with responses on social media. And so I had like ramped that up to, you know, the dial went all the way up to 10 or beyond when I was doing my book launch and in the months after that. And when I left, I had to like slowly turn that dial back down and then find the place where it actually felt like really good to be creating and sharing for me. And then after a while, the loneliness set in. I think that that's a big piece of why we stay on social media. It's where we connect with people we know and love. And in the beginning, everybody was excited that I left. And, you know, I was better at sending texts and I was better at reaching out. And people were like, oh, you're not on social, but I'll just like text you this Instagram reel that was hilarious. And after, you know, 6 months or so, that kind of died back down. And it was on me to figure out what relationships am I going to prioritize maintaining and how am I doing that? And, you know, it's been a rocky path, I think. There are certainly friendships that are not as close because I'm not there to see their stories, comment on what they're up to. And then there are other friendships that are significantly deeper because we are both putting in that outreach effort, sharing what's really going on without the veneer of, you know, the photos and fun and funny things and all the memes kind of between us. That said, I still text memes to a lot of my friends all the time, but, you know, I think that was a big shift. But I would say now, like on the whole, my nervous system is much more regulated. My creative process is much more in conversation with what I want to create than with what I think will perform well according to an algorithm or an audience. And I personally think my work is better than ever because I've leaned into the formats I love rather than feeling forced into the formats that will perform well.
Thank you. I'm noticing so many feelings coming up for me.
Yeah, please share. I want to hear about them.
I'm like, oh gosh. Yeah, what can I say? Well, my therapeutic training is the story I'm telling myself is. Okay. So the story I'm telling myself is because I'm a Leo sun, there is a very visceral, maybe it's anxious attachment too. I have a very visceral need to be seen that I'm also working through right now in my circle that I'm like really working through of like this story that I'm not seen enough, that people don't see me or that I'm not like revealing myself. And I can't quite tell if it's like just a sort of flash in the pan, quick dopamine hit, or it's actually medicinal. Of when I reveal myself in my truth, it's still curated, but on social media, it feels good. And if that was taken away, where would I get that? And I literally say, this is so real, Amelia, where would I get that?
Yeah.
Particularly because I just moved to a new community. I moved to a new community that's much more rural. And what I'm finding in this community is Instagram is the way I'm finding out about the farm events and the spiritual witchy mama meetups and I'm finding out about the things I want to find on Instagram. And I'm also sort of letting people know I'm here and calling people to me on Instagram. So I can get into that sort of like digital altar space of being like, it's a spell. And it works for me sometimes. And then I become luteal. And then my hormones change.
Yes.
And I'm fucked up. I'm not okay. I'm comparing. I'm convincing myself of stories that I know aren't true, but can't believe that they aren't, that they aren't not true. It's the toxic relationship side.
Yeah.
So I find myself sort of the pendulum swings every month. Between these experiences of being like, this is beautiful. This is powerful. This feels really good. And this feels awful. And then there's the added layer of like, the story I'm telling myself is I need to be on it for my business, for my work, for this podcast, for people paying me money for the services I provide. And that's a tricky one. I've listened to and been coached enough by you to know that that's actually not a true truth, but it's a sneaky one, right? That I talk to so many, you know, like makers and space holders who are like, I just have to be on it. So that's where I'm at listening to you. Any thoughts?
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I am sure. I mean, it resonates with my own experience and I'm sure it speaks to how other people are feeling. You know, I think I'll speak to that last business point first, then I'll go back to the community aspect. I think those are the two strongest narratives and experiences, like use cases where we're like, social media is great. It's like, it's great for business and it's great for community building. That is what was promised to us on all of these apps. And it's many of our experiences of them. I don't know anyone who's left social media publicly who like wasn't really invested and in love with their experience on the app at some point, and then that shifted. Of course, there are people who never got on them and never cared about this, but like, they're not listening to my podcast. They're probably not tuning into this episode. They're like, I don't get it, you guys.
Right. That's so, like a different experience.
Yes, exactly. I think in terms of business, part of what I'm hearing you say is that it's working well enough. You know, with our marketing, there's no promise that anything's going to work, whether you are on social media, you are writing a newsletter, you are SEO optimizing your website, you are all over Pinterest. Like each of us, we choose the marketing channels that we feel like we will succeed at for many reasons. Those are going to be, what are our strengths? What do we enjoy doing? Where is our audience or the people we're selling to? Where are they hanging out? And I think for many people, the answer to a lot of those questions is still Instagram. Yeah. And at that point, you know, yes, the whole argument of my podcast is, if you don't want to be there, you don't have to be there. Like, this belief that we have to be there, I think, is false. I think that's a myth. But the other thing I say is, if you're not there, you have to do other things. And I think for a lot of people, the like frustration and annoyance of being on social media is still less than the labor and effort of doing the other things it would require to grow and sustain your business without it. Mm-hmm. And that's a choice I understand. I think that's a choice that all business owners are making all the time, especially those of us who are small business owners or, you know, solopreneurs who are just like doing our own thing by ourselves or with a couple trusted partners. Like, we don't have a whole marketing team to like come up with a plan for shifting off social media and executing it for us, right? Like, if we're going to do all that work, it's going to be us. And I understand not wanting to divest from that space or not being able to, because for many people, it will mean a monetary hit for a while. And not everyone can take that. Like, I'm a Capricorn rising. I'm a really pragmatic person. I'm not coming at this from a place of idealism that this is a decision we should all make. I think that it really does depend on the business and the other aspects of your life that are going to determine how much time and energy you have to put into marketing. And for some of us, it feels so bad that it's no longer a choice. And then that's also where off the grid is really, I'm trying to show up and serve other options and possibilities, so that for those of us who hit that point where we have to leave, like it's an urge from within or without, I want there to be other pathways forward. And then the community piece, I mean, I feel that really deeply. I also moved right when I left Instagram, or no, I moved 6 months before I left Instagram, and I was in a new community. And I had found out about a lot of things by following local stores and people on social media. And it was challenging to step away from that. But what I will say has been a really interesting experiment and shift for me is that when I was most active on social media, I was living in Chicago. And, you know, in the beginning, when I moved there, nobody knew me, and like I was meeting everyone anew. And by the end, almost everyone I met already knew me through Instagram and was encountering me through this sort of like preconceived understanding of who I was based on my personal brand on the internet. And honestly, sometimes that was
feeling that.
Yeah, and it was a mixed bag. Sometimes it was awesome. I was like, oh, I don't have to tell you I have a podcast, I do this. You already know. Great. And sometimes I was like, oh, I don't know if I needed that to like, I wanted to have a different interaction with you. And you're like purely coming at me through this perspective and some things you've projected onto my internet presence. So it was a really mixed bag. Again, those like highs and lows. And living here now without social media, when I meet people, they have no clue who I am. I don't matter to them any more than any other person they're meeting that day. And I get to choose to disclose things about my work or my life or who I am on the internet or not. And you know, since you've been very vulnerable and open, I'll be really vulnerable and open. Sometimes I get, as an Aries sun, I get those moments where I'm like, excuse me, don't you know that I matter on the internet?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, hello, like people listen to me. Why aren't you listening to me? So that's like my own wounding. I own that. But sometimes it's really annoying. I'm like, well, if I was still on Instagram, you'd know that I was important. And that's where me and my ego just have a little conversation and we let it go and we move on. Mm-hmm. And that's currently kind of this what I've been swimming in around these questions of social media and community.
Yeah. I'm realizing like that I almost cried when you just said the word like and community, and you took a deep breath and I was like, because obviously that's like what I talk about all the time. It's a big, it's a wound. It's my work. Mm-hmm. And because, I mean, I think you were sharing earlier about how, like, thank you for talking about the loneliness setting in and, like, some people you've maintained relationships with and some you haven't. Mm-hmm. Because there's, like, a cultural enrollment in the place we go is Instagram, at least for millennials, for the most part. Mm-hmm. And so if you're opting out of that, of course, there's an inherent loneliness in, like, some people. Yeah. It's like, is everyone hanging out without me?
Yeah.
One of my favorite they are. I'm Mindy Kaling. And it's like, yes. And so I asked myself if I can handle that in this season of my life. And I'm hearing you say, like, the pain of staying was worse than the pain of leaving. Yeah. I'm really sitting with that. And I'm also curious, I shared, like, I have this story that I'm seeing. It's a pathway, at least for two weeks of the month, a place where I can feel seen. Mm-hmm. And it feels deeply nourishing to me. And so I'm like, and maybe I'll just ask you, like, if I left, where else could I feel seen?
Well,
I feel embarrassed that I just asked that. I feel so embarrassed because it's like, oh my gosh, wow, that's what I think and feel.
Yeah. Well, I'm sitting with you in that. I think it's very, I want to say real, but I think what I mean is, I think many of us are walking around feeling like we've never been seen by our families, which has created a very deep wounding in us. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for many of us who were, you know, indoctrinated by our own consent into social media, that is where we covered up that wound. I don't think it healed it at all, because I think the platforms and the way they function actually aggravate that wounding. But it's where we go to feel seen, and that feels good because we haven't felt seen for a long time. And it's where we meet friends and encounter or connect with chosen family. And, like, I think that we somewhat falsely contribute that to the platform when it's really about the relationships. Mm. But to more directly speak to your question, like, where do you go to feel seen? A big part of my journey was that I don't think I could have left social media if I hadn't been in a very securely attached partnership. I feel like deeply seen by my partner, JJ, and that's been really healing for me, especially because when I made this move, I mentioned I left Chicago. I moved from Chicago to Nebraska, where now I live very close to my family for the first time since I went to boarding school when I was 16. And it brought up a lot of that wounding around, the way they see me is really different than the self-image I had constructed by living in Chicago for 7 years and establishing myself there. And I had to do a lot of work to integrate those different self-images and to really stand and stay true to myself and to be fluid and flexible and be like, I can accept that they see me this way. I can know myself to be a different way, and I can live in relationship in all of this. In terms of where do I go to be seen now, I go to my podcast, I go to my friendships, I go to my partnership. And what I've really leaned into is cultivating a life where I have a lot of different types of relationships that see different aspects of myself, you know, through my journey with secure attachment and releasing anxious attachment. Part of that was realizing that, like, I couldn't rely on one person to, like, perfectly see every part of me. Like, the only one who could do that is me. And perfect is a bad word there. Like, only I, at the end of the day, being seen is about me seeing myself. And I need the beautiful mirrors of relationship to reflect that self back to me. But, you know, I go to my podcast to meet those marketing mirrors. I go to my relationship to meet the mirror around so many aspects of myself that I don't even share publicly. I go to my family so that my inner child can be mirrored back to me, parts of my life I don't even remember. I have so many friendships from high school who mirror some of my most like rambunctious fun years back to me. I have friends who I know through my business who mirror that back to me. Friends who could care less about my business who mirror, you know, my more like spiritual and witchier sides back to me. And so it's interesting in the way that I think social media can kind of give us that hit. And I guess maybe my question back to you is, what parts of yourself do you feel are seen on social media? When you say like, that's where I go to be seen, I know many sides of Becca. So like, what are the sides of Becca that are being seen on social media?
So interesting that you asked that, because I've had a lot of my friends and even clients when I meet them in person, which is rarely, but that's changing because I just, that's what I want. I think, yeah, much change is afoot for me, which is why I feel brave to have this conversation. A lot of the feedback I get is, I do not see these parts of you online and I'm craving that. Like, you're really sassy. You are obsessed with pop culture. You are hilarious. And I've realized I've cultivated a persona that is not me, you know. It's my deep work. It's like, it's like, you know, lineage built. It's so important to me. I have a very serious topic, you know. You and I changed the intro music to this podcast to the clapping from the woman moaning in the cave try to shift
just a
deeper seeing of me. Just like to say that thing, I think people, longtime listeners, might appreciate knowing that. Anyways, what was your question?
What parts of you are seen on social media?
On social media, it's a curated part, right? There's a part of me that wants to feel taken seriously, so that I reveal on social media. There is a part of me that wants to be seen as a teacher. There's a parts of me that want to be seen as, trying to find the word for it. Like, it's always changing. I'm such a dynamic person, manifesting generator, just like always, always, always shifting. But right now, I want people to see my new life, because I want to see me in my new life. I was talking about this with my friend Hillary Maddox when she interviewed me about the first 4 months of landing here in a new place, and how I was posting on social media like beautiful farmscapes and the donkey and the chickens and the and my child running around the lake. And I was getting a lot of texts from my friends, because they are watching my social media, saying, it looks so beautiful. I'm so happy for you. And I would text them back, I am not okay. I am not okay. My child is grieving. Yeah. I am grieving. I am not okay. And then they'd say, but it looks so beautiful on social media. And I'd say, I'm doing that to show me that this is beautiful and that this is my life. So really what I was doing is, this comes back to like, I see myself. I was posting to feel seen and also remind myself that in this emotional turmoil of a really intense life transition, I had a beautiful life. Which I could make mean really messed up stuff, or I could make mean really beautiful way. I figured out a way to soothe myself. So yeah, I'm realizing in this moment, I want to feel seen by myself by watching my Instagram. And is that healthy?
Well, you know, I think I love what you said there. Like, I could make that mean really beautiful things or really messed up things. And I think sometimes it's okay to not make it mean anything. Like, you have the self-awareness. You're like, oh, this is what I'm doing. That's interesting. And you can just keep observing and being with yourself. I mean, I think that since there have been photographs, humans have been, you know, portraying themselves as they would like to be seen and in ways that they want to see themselves. And so I think that on one level with Instagram, we just have like a different technological method, frequency, intensity of that. On the other hand, I think where it gets challenging is, it's not simply, you know, a camera roll that's on your phone, right? It's not just a record of photos. It's also a engagement space where other people are coming in, having thoughts and feelings about what you're sharing, and where you, part of your impulse for sharing is also has to do with having a business and making money. So it's like a lot gets wrapped into that space. And then there's an algorithm surfacing it to people or not. You know, there are a lot of other layers that social media apps bring beyond just the media aspect. But what I'm hearing you describe is, I think, like an impulse that goes back before Instagram.
Yes.
And I'm not here to judge that one way or another or any way at all.
Oh, thanks, Amelia. Yeah, you feel very safe to talk to you about it. And I think for those of us who are grappling, because I know I'm not alone with this, it's so important to find space within ourselves or in listening to this or with, you know, beloveds where we can just be honest, right, about what it is we're doing. I'm glad you brought up the different layers. And I made a note that says, how does it aggravate the wound? I think what I'm real in my like deep dive that I do every few years about like what's messed up about the design of these apps, as someone who comes from the tech world and has a partner who's still in it and really trying to leave. And being elder millennials, or I identify as an elder millennial who like saw the beginning and saw the trajectory, right, of the way technology has gone, is so what I had read, and I'm going to try to paraphrase this, is an analysis on how the brain perceives a feed of photos and how it's that compare and despair syndrome a lot of us get, that I always get on day 27 of my moon cycle. Mm-hmm. Of that, our brain, because our brains are primitive animal things, right? They cannot upgrade with the next iOS. They just don't do that. There's progression in the brain with culture, but it just doesn't move that fast. Yeah. I love to remind us of that every day of our lives, that we are not machines. And so the brain is looking at a feed of pictures. Let's just talk about Instagram, because that's the place. And it's all the different people that you follow, which could be hundreds, if not thousands, their lives. It's like always in August, I'm convinced everyone's in Italy. Everyone's in Italy in August.
They were last year for sure.
They really were.
They really were. Everyone was.
Everyone's in Italy and I'm not, you know, or like everyone's engaged, right? That's a big one for that time of your life, or everyone's having a baby. When I was going through just like miscarriage after miscarriage and such grief, and I just was like, everyone is pregnant, right? Mm-hmm. The phenomenon I'm speaking to is that our brains can't actually see that, like, that one person posted that one time, the time they went to Italy, and they haven't posted anything else. And then that one person is sharing their life. And then that one person is sharing this. But last week, you know, it all just looks like everyone is doing the thing and I'm not. And that really hit something in me as someone who has that tendency towards feeling like I don't belong. I'm not in the cool girl club. Everyone's doing something cooler than me. Like, that's when I know, oop. Yeah, let's look at that. When I realized like the algorithm is designed with knowing that about the human brain, that wants, that keeps you sort of in it, and that fucks with us. So that helped me, you know, and then also the curation of it, the highlight reel, right? That it's not everyone's real life. So I'm curious if there's anything else that maybe comes to mind about how the design of these platforms aggravates the wound.
Yeah, a few things. Well, I think that going way back in social media,
please,
just to even to Facebook, even to the earliest platforms, I think that social media gave us access to other people's lives in a way that's not always like supportive for us, especially if you're an anxiously attached person. It really, like, any, I found that any boundary work that I tried to do to like establish between me and people I was struggling with codependency, like social media just made it way too easy for either person to just breeze past all that, you know, see directly into my life, me see directly into their life. And I think that really aggravates a wound, this like constant instantaneous access to curated views of other people's lives and worlds can be harmful. If you, especially if you're someone who struggles with belonging. I also think that the ways that social media algorithms are programmed to primarily keep you on the apps, which means that they have learned over time, whether the companies say they designed them this way or not, through machine learning, they have learned that more controversial things, more shocking things, more upsetting things are what are going to hook us and keep us going, scrolling, going deeper. And there have been studies that have shown now that, you know, if you stay on YouTube long enough, you will end up either on like a far right or far left corner of it.
Yes.
Just through the content that you're served on the side panel when they're recommending what to watch next. There are studies, I also believe, that have shown that like if you set up a Instagram profile that is conceivably for a young woman, it will eventually, and then scroll in some sort of normal way. I don't know exactly how they determine that, but like it will eventually be served disordered eating content, like pro disordered eating content. So
what?
There's lots of, again, these are studies I've read about online, so I'm sure there is much more nuance than I can present in this like brief moment, but the ways that the algorithms have learned to incite us, I think, aggravate those wounds around belonging, around getting to know ourselves, being centered in what we believe, who we are, coming to decisions about those things. You know, then we get into the spread of fake news, particularly on Facebook, the way that people, you know, we're trained, I think, with that like animal brain to trust and believe people that we love, unless that is broken and harmed and that becomes, you know, a trauma we have to recover from. But when we see those people sharing all these things, it's our instinct, in my experience, to believe them. And then, but it's very easy for them to just be sharing things that are completely not true or either about the world or about their own lives. And so I just think that the swirl of misinformation and an algorithm that's designed to upset you in some way or another, and it can learn you. So it can learn that FOMO is one of the things that will keep you scrolling the most, and it will just serve you up those photos, right? Facebook's made very clear, Meta has made very clear that they look at what you look at and they show you more of that. Like, so if you pause on that photo because you're really upset about it, they'll be serving you more baby photos every day, you know? And so I think that this is how even sometimes when we do all the therapy, we put in all the work to be able to walk away from that moment, to support our best friend through this big transition in their life, even if it's something we're grieving that we don't have. Maybe we can do that for one person we love, but can we do it for infinite people on the internet? Like that becomes this, I don't know how to cultivate that skill. And I don't think it's a deficit in us that we struggle with that. I think that has to do with the platforms, that has to do with the feed that you're mentioning, has to do with the algorithms that I'm, you know, bringing into this equation. And we haven't even gotten to all the worthiness wounding and belonging wounding around what happens when you post something and nobody likes it, which I think is honestly like one of the first wounds people encounter.
Yeah.
So those are just a few of the ways that I think these like wounds we're talking about around belonging or around codependency or anxious attachment are really aggravated and worsened by social media platforms.
Thank you. I needed to hear all of that. I'm remembering how manipulated I felt by Instagram in my early postpartum days because many new parents who are up in the night or in that place of timeless time that feels very isolating are on their phones, you know, breastfeeding, feeding their babies, up with a colicky child, whatever it is, and they go to their phones. And especially because I was a postpartum mother in 2020, so I was really just me and my phone. Yeah. And I remember, first of all, being assaulted with all these things I had to purchase, which felt like I'm at such a tender time. And like, I felt very angry for all these like parents who are probably on a reduced income being on leave, feeling like they need to buy all this stuff. But then I remember I kept getting fed reels about children choking and sudden infant death syndrome over and over and over again. and then things I could buy to ensure that wouldn't happen.
Of course.
I'm looking at you, D choker, F you. It was so messed up. Yeah. And I remember it was a moment where I was like, don't do that to me. I do not consent to that. I forgot about that. So yeah, there you go. There's an experience that felt messed up.
Yeah. And I think that when we're in those vulnerable moments, the times we feel really vulnerable, like when we're up, when we're a new parent or when we're up with a child or it's the middle of the night and we're up for any reason.
Yes.
We want to connect. We go to our phones to connect. That's the urge. And when we do that through social media, just so often that drive for connection ends up steering us in a really different direction. And it's really challenging, especially in those moments, to like have the fortitude to be like, oh, I see what's happening here. It's manipulating me. I'm not going to do that, et cetera, et cetera. You could see it in hindsight, maybe even the next morning. But like when you're in it at that moment, when you're really vulnerable and you really need connection and that's what you're seeing, I just think that is really harmful for us. And you were not the first person I've heard have a similar experience, particularly in those postpartum months or years where like I've talked to a lot of people who end up stepping away or leaving social media during that time because they just see so acutely how targeted they are and how vulnerable they are to that targeting, even if they don't think of themselves as a person who is vulnerable to that. And, you know, I am not a parent, so I haven't had this experience. But another reason I left social media was I realized that I didn't trust my own taste and desires anymore. I just kept buying things that everyone around me bought.
Yes.
And they would arrive at my house and I would be like, why did I buy this neck pillow? Like, I'm
what am I holding in
this.
My hand? A freaking Stanley cup. Why? It leaks. It's stupid.
Exactly. Yeah. So many things. And yeah. And I mean, I was a micro influencer for a period of time. I shelled out SponCon. I'm not here to like, I am as guilty as charged and I will own that and recognize that. If you ever bought Parade underwear because I recommended it to you, my apologies. I mean, I love some of my Parade underwear. It wasn't a false recommendation, but also like I have so much of it even to this day, like nobody needed that much underwear. So I just think that we are all vulnerable to culture. Vulnerable is maybe a hard way to put it, but like we are all impacted by culture. We are all shaped by our relationships with other people. That's a part of life. That's one of the joys of life. And it can be a joy on social media as well. I don't know anyone who hasn't met a good friend on the internet. Right. I think the internet is magical. I am not a Luddite personally or politically. I love the internet.
Yeah.
And I think it's been a portal to so many amazing things in my life, including meeting you, including this conversation.
Yeah.
And I think that it's just important to bring intention and awareness to why we use social media apps, to be in touch with how they make us feel, and to realize that we are not trapped there. We can leave them. We can step back. We can step away entirely if it is not the right thing for us or for our business. There are other ways to connect with community. There are other ways to market and share your work if that is the path for you or if that's what you want to do. Like, don't let Meta or TikTok or the influencers you follow or your other business owner friends convince you that you have to be on social media.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true. You may have a harder path or a different path if you leave social media. You may have a way easier path, but there are other paths. And I think that's what's just most important to me for all of us to remember. And I think that's what liberation is. It's just like actively choosing the path that we're on. And whether or not that social media is a part of that for you and your liberation is not anyone else's to judge.
Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful point to end on. Thank you so much for this very raw an honest and tender conversation. There's so much more I want to say. I'm realizing there's a lot here I want to unpack and process in my life. And I think what I'm taking away is how my anxious attachment is being played out on social media, mm-hmm. how I am making it the place that I am only seen instead of mm-hmm. Perhaps a one place that I am seen, where else I can feel seen. I am reminded of the like toxic, harmful ways it preys upon my vulnerabilities. And I'm inspired to expand my perspective on what is possible for connection in my new life in this community, so that I don't feel so tethered to one experience, one way of doing it. And I have to remind myself just what you said, like I can choose a different path. Mm-hmm. I can choose a different path. So I appreciate you and what you shared and what that brought up in me.
Yeah. Well, thank you for inviting me into this conversation. And I really appreciate everything that you shared and the invitation to share and to really dig into like what is underneath these stories we're telling ourselves about social media. Like what's under there? Because it's not never quite what we expect, or sometimes what we're willing to admit to ourselves. So thank you for joining me and admitting all these things to everyone listening today.
Hello.
And thanks to all of you for listening.
Thanks for stepping into my heart. Do you want to share about the interweb?
Sure. Okay. Yeah. So Becca's mentioned that I run a podcast called Off the Grid, Leaving Social Media Without Losing All Your Clients. And it is primarily for small business owners and creatives who want to step back or away from social media and run a successful, sustainable business that doesn't rely on it. And for those folks, I also offer a membership called The Interweb, which is a content and community space where you can learn from me. I've got a course in there called Business Success Without Social Media that walks you through just some real business fundamentals to set yourself up for success that is not reliant on any platform. I've got a lot of guest workshops on everything from finding your North Star metric to choosing the right business model to there's a really beautiful visualization for uncovering your relationship with social media in there. And then we have quarterly gatherings to get together and feel community around these questions, because so many of us are asking them and could use that support. So I'd say if you want to get to know me a little better, listen to Off the Grid. And if you want to get to know me a lot better, come join the interweb. It's a really affordable annual membership. So it's really meant to serve as many people as we can in, again, just like choosing and finding your own liberation with less social media involved. Not none. Most people in there are still on social media in some way.
Oh.
They're just not interested in relying on social media anymore.
That identifies that kind of a human in this moment. Yeah, so I know not everyone here who listens identifies as a business owner, but if you do, highly recommend everything Amelia does. Thank you again. I love you. Thank you for being with me here today.
I love you too. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. In a time when our attention is being pulled in so many directions, I feel honored you chose to devote some of yours here with me. If you want to check out show notes or listen to past episodes, go to belongingpodcast.com. And if you like what we talk about here and want to know more, you can subscribe to my newsletter at beccapiastrelli.com. I'll be with you again soon.